Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by Mobius Strip Press. I am G.R. Mobley. If you go to my site, reclaimingtherepublic.org, you will have access to my content and support documents and links. This is an educational grassroots program leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back. We are celebrating Constitution Day, and technically, I think this was another sleight of hand by those who, I believe, tried to create some recognition for Constitution Day, because what we do is actually celebrate Constitution Week. And there is, there's no doubt in my mind, you shouldn't be getting a holiday. In contrast to the Declaration of Independence, I would say that the Constitution is far more important. And that is because the Constitution has created a very specific framework for our government, not just some ideas and ideals. The foundation that the Constitution was built upon was clearly the Declaration of Independence and also the Articles of Confederation. It was a part of the evolution, but it is our current framework. And that's why it's more important, because if we do not understand the framework and the limitations within that framework, then we are doomed to be held hostage. We're doomed to have tyrannical government take advantage of our ignorance regarding our framework. So that's why every year I read through the Constitution, and every year I editorialize on those parts of the Constitution that are really, I mean, the Constitution is being violated in every, or lots of different directions, but what we want to focus on today is more or less the whole fact that these very specific points are being violated as we read through it today, tomorrow, or however long it takes. Usually it takes about 3-4 days, depending on how much I editorialize. But anyway, I wanted to let you know that as I look through the news, I really, other than small little organizations and or small governments, and what I mean by that is small polities, like maybe a county or county commissioners or something like that, there is no really big festivity for the Constitution, nor is there any really big festivity for a state when it had ratified or joined the Constitution, when they were accepted and established as a stakeholder in the Constitution. Fundamentally, that's the state's birthday. And we celebrate the nation's birthday. Why don't we celebrate the state's birthday? It's equally important, right? Now that this state that you live in, maybe it was one of the original 13, or maybe it wasn't. But the day it became a stakeholder in the Constitution is a pretty significant thing, because we basically, as a state, strapped ourselves onto an organization or became a part of an entity that had created the greatest level of liberty that's ever seen in the history of mankind. And we are now at the precipice of losing that one thing that guarantees and protects that. And that's due to the fact that the entity that is created by this said compact, by this Constitution, feels it is not bound by any of the restrictions and or I will call them the enumerations of powers, that it can do anything and everything, and therefore the day is coming soon when they believe they will be able to set aside this Constitution, which is not theirs to set aside. Because as you listen to the show, you understand that this Constitution, this compact, is the state's compact. It is not the federal government's. They didn't exist when this Constitution was written. And this is why they were delegated very specific powers, only to, you know, only to have jurisdiction over these things. They did not have jurisdiction. As Madison points out, they didn't even have jurisdiction to tax, the exports. Things that the farmers were growing, they did not have the ability to tax productivity. They only taxed things coming in to protect and to help bolster our economy. Anyway, the listen number is 605-562-4209. What is the listen number? The listen number is the number you can dial if you cannot listen or stream this entire show. Or if you are out and about in an area where you can get the coverage, but maybe it's spotty. Just use the listen number, 605-562-4209. You can listen on your car, because most cars have phones now. Most technology allows you to be able to have access, and almost everybody has their wireless access almost everywhere. There's quite a few parts in America in the really dark red states that have a hard limitation to where they get cell coverage, because I talk to people all over in these states, whether that be the Dakotas, Wyoming, and so forth, Montana. I mean, there's plenty of dead spots, but most of America, we got to remember that most of the people that are living in America have pretty good cell coverage. So anyway, the listen number is 605-562-4209 if you do not want to miss a minute of this show. As you know, this show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org as well as RepublicReview.org. We've covered a lot of information. We've covered the ratification debates. We've covered the 1798 resolutions. We've covered the essay on paragraph or the essay on property. We've covered the cod fishery bounties. We've covered, I even believe we've covered portions of George Washington's farewell address. We've covered a lot that has laid the foundation that says the only way the federal government can obtain a new role, responsibility, and power is by applying and utilizing the Article 5 process. In other words, as of recent, if they want and the states want them to dally and protect people of very specific classes, race, ethnicity, gender, and so forth, and even disabilities, then they have to amend the Constitution. Ergo, the Civil Rights Act, the Disability Act, and all these other acts, because they're not constitutional amendments, they do not have jurisdiction over those matters. They have jurisdiction over those matters in only one place and one place alone, and that one place would be in the District of Columbia, per the Constitution. So, let's kind of move on. I'm going to just, instead of groveling through everything, let me just basically say we do have Red State Coffee that we would love to have you try. Go to ReclaimingTheRepublic.org, get your Red State Coffee, try it, give us a call, 425-270-5416. Tell us what you think. We would love to have you help endorse a true patriotic product like Red State Coffee. And so with that, let's kind of set the stage. The Constitution didn't just kind of happen, right? As we understood it, and if anybody that reads history, they will understand, know, and what's a better word for it? I would just say that you will realize if you studied the history of our evolution of governance, you'll realize that the Articles of Confederation were in peril. They were coming to a point where the people like Washington finally realized, Madison knew this, and there were a lot of other people that knew that we were heading off the cliff, that the Articles of Confederation were going to fail because they were not going to be able to pay their debts, because states were getting worse and worse in being able to collect and pay on their debts. And so it was just a matter of time. And so what ended up happening was, and if you really look at the history, Madison worked with a lot of different individuals, and his focus was getting Washington to the table. There were lots of people that he, you know, was able to convince to get on board with, but like Hamilton. But Washington was the immovable force, and they knew, or he knew specifically, that if he could get Washington to come to the table, the rest of the Republic would follow suit. And so the most pivotal point in convincing Washington, most people will point to the Shays Rebellion, but after the Shays Rebellion, Madison sent a letter to General Knox, who was a part of the Society of Cincinnati. Washington was looking to become a member of the Society of Cincinnati. And Madison sent this letter basically pleading, hey, we really need him. We're at this point. And Knox was on board. He recognized where the country was and what needed to happen. So what ended up happening was Knox actually sent a letter to Washington to say, hey, don't worry about the Society of Cincinnati. That'll always be here. But this republic may not. This is why we need you to actually be involved and get involved and help shaping and saving this republic. And so that was, I believe, the biggest push that helped Washington jump in and say, okay, I will go. I will attend. Anyway, with that, we have two breaks, or two promos, and we will be right back and we'll get into the Constitution. And by the way, happy Constitution Day.
Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org. And let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
Okay, so the number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK or 215-867-8255. Do not forget my three C's when you dial in. And let's get on with the dialogue.
Okay, so the first thing that we dive into is obviously the preamble. The preamble is basically the this is what we're doing type of thing. It's like a preface to a book. But instead of just reading the book, because most people don't read the preface, when it comes to the Constitution, everybody reads the preamble. And that's because most people, when they look and read at the preamble, they get this, I'll just say they get this sense of democracy.
And that's because it starts off with we the people of the United States. If you don't know this, I want to share this with you because this style change at the very end of the Constitution, during the convention, the very end of the convention, they decided to make a style change because how it read was we the people of the state of Connecticut, the state of Delaware, the state of, and they listed all 13 states instead of the United States. So they made a style change to take away the listing of the states. Now you got to understand that this created this paradigm. It's we the people, it's we the people. When really, they put too much focus on the people and not the focus of who the stakeholders were, which were the states. Now, clearly, Wilson, Madison, they all recognize that the people are the ultimate sovereigns. However, in our current system, at the time of the convention, they recognize that the people have already created legitimate sovereigns. Those legitimate sovereigns were the states. And in, in the treaty with the King of Britain, King George actually acknowledged a treaty with each of the independent sovereign states. Instead of acknowledging the United States or the Articles of Confederation, in other words, he didn't refer to the United States or the Republic of America or whatever their union term was, their collective name or title. That didn't occur until the Constitution. When the Constitution created this general government, it created the United States. But the general government was a subservient government in the fact that the states were the sovereigns. And that, I believe, has been completely lost, and that is one of the most important principles that most people do not get or understand. This is why it's not the people that ratify the amendments. It's not like a popular vote that they send it out there. No, it is each state gets one vote. That's why I tell you that when they talk about a poll, when they talk about doing research and that more people support socialism, they're going by the count of people in blue states. They're not going by the count of the states and that small percentage. In other words, let's say, okay, New York, California, and New Hampshire, or what have you, some of these ultra-liberal states, Illinois. Okay, so that's five. Maybe that's eight. But 8 out of 50 is a very small percentage. But what they try to get you to believe is 40%. Well, 40%, shoot, that would mean how many states out of 50? That would mean 20, right? We would have 20 states out of 50, but that's not the accurate number. What they want to do is they want to, and that's why they focus on the people and the numbers of the people, and that's why they focus in blue states. They don't have people that are actually doing polls, that are doing accurate sampling within all these dark red states of the Dakotas and Wyoming and so forth. Are you kidding me? That would cost them way too much money to do a poll when they could just, you know, sit at a mall in California and sit at a mall in New York and count enough people. We need 2,000 people to sample here. 2,000 random people, and this is going to give us the numbers that we need to convince people that we want socialism. Anyway, I digress. So the preamble starts off with a major change that has created a paradigm over the past 200 years that it's we the people, baby. It's we the people. It's a democracy when it's not. We the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense, and promote the general welfare, and secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, do ordain and establish this Constitution of the United States. Now, the next thing, that's the preamble. That's what they're doing. They're introducing that we are ratifying and establishing this. So everybody is bought into that has ratified this, this concept of providing for the common defense and promoting. But again, these are not enumerated powers. Okay. So Article 1, Section 1. All legislative powers herein granted shall be vested in a Congress of the United States. Well, that has been violated significantly by executive orders and especially by the bench. The bench for 200 years has been legislating by creating law. You got to understand, legislative powers are the ability to create law. Well, as near as I can tell, this is saying that only Congress can create law. And it says, which shall consist of a Senate and a House of Representatives. Hey, they didn't include SCOTUS. What's up? Because had they included SCOTUS, had they included that the justices would be able to create law and the president, then the states would have rejected this constitution because they wanted sovereigns to be represented, not these people of lifetime and or of high nobility in a position such as president and so forth. What they wanted was they wanted to make sure that, one, the people were represented in the creation of laws, and, again, that American republicanism, that's another thing we went through over the past month and a half, American republicanism, which means that those sovereigns of the states, because, again, we created the state sovereignties to legislate for us, they also had representation. So that is why both the Senate and the House, representatives of the people and representatives of the states themselves, were those who only had the power to create law. Section 2, the House of Representatives shall be composed of members chosen every second year by the people of the several states, and the electors in each state shall have the qualifications requisite for electors of the most numerous branch of the state legislature. So what they're basically saying is they're laying out who are supposed to be those representatives and that they will be chosen every second year. In other words, they are in a perpetual, what we call, campaign because, okay, they may get 1 year of work, but their second year, which is what we're going to witness in the 2020, most all of these folks, these dolts, are going to be running on their re-election campaign. I've done all of these things for you. And it says that the electors in each state shall have the qualifications requisite for electors of the most numerous branch. So in other words, these folks have to have the most, they have to have the qualifications of those who are representatives and the state representatives as well. No person shall be a representative. So here's the requirements. No person shall be a representative who shall not have attained to the age of 25 years and been 7 years a citizen of the United States, and who shall not, when elected, be an inhabitant of that state in which he shall be chosen, and who shall not, when elected, be an inhabitant of that state in which he shall be chosen. So what does that mean? And who shall not? 7 years of the citizen, and who shall not, when elected, be an inhabitant of the state in which he shall be chosen? I don't think that they're meaning, and they're not purporting, that you have to be an elector of a state you don't inhabit, but you have to be a resident of that state for 7 years. Or actually, you have to be a United States citizen, and I believe that you don't have to be a resident for 7 years of the state. I believe it is 1 year, but they don't define that here. What they do define is that that will be left to the states. Representatives and direct taxes shall be apportioned among the several states which may be included within this union. There's those few words. What is it? Five words. Direct taxes shall be apportioned. This is a huge change from the Articles of Confederation, because now the federal government has abilities to directly tax. But what do they have the ability to tax for? Well, for their functioning of the government, not for, you know, just oppressing the people. And so within this union, according to their respective numbers, and so the apportionment, by the way, is not by square miles. The apportionment was by the amount of people. And that was the same thing with representation. We are at a break, so when we come back, we will have more of Section 2, because that's what we're going through right now. And we're in the third paragraph of Section 2, if you want to read along. We will be right back after these two promos, though. Thank you so much.
The reason progressives are effective in instituting their policies is because they are united ideologically, financially, and socially. In addition, almost every billionaire in the world is funding a vast array of different groups, and these groups' efforts are to undermine our republic and our constitution. If you don't believe me, just Google donors to the Open Society Foundations. The only way we're going to successfully combat these efforts and take back our liberties, like our education system, healthcare, state lands, housing, labor, and many other roles, responsibilities and powers that belong to the states, is by you and I and local businesses getting involved in supporting political programs and efforts based on constitutional principles. The best way to do this is supporting result-oriented organizations designed to take back our lost liberties. The ultimate result-oriented effort is Republic Review. So please consider contributing to the show and the organizations and activities that we are supporting by going to reclaimingtherepublic.org and go to the contribution page, and you can become a listed supporter of liberty. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.
That number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK, 215-867-8255. And again, don't forget those three C's. And if you're ready to call in, the lines are open. Okay, so moving on. And I know the language they use is very arcane, how they kind of assemble their sentences and so forth. And so when you kind of go through who shall be a representative shall not have attained and who shall not, I know it kind of trips people up, but the important thing is, just regarding that requirement of state representation, it doesn't speculate or it doesn't specify a specific year. And if you remember Hillary Clinton, I believe she had to be a resident of New York for at least 1 year before she could become a senator. And I think that's the same thing with representations and so forth. It is a state requirement. And when it comes down to, you know, other state positions, I believe Wyoming requires that you be a resident of 5 years if you want to be the president or the governor, not the president, the governor of the state of Wyoming. Anyway, moving on, the representation and direct taxes shall be apportioned among the several states which may be included within this union. In other words, if there are states in the union, then they will be apportioned according to the respective numbers, which shall be determined by adding to the whole number of free persons, including those bound to service for a term of years, and excluding Indians not taxed, comma, three-fifths of all other persons. And that three-fifths of all other persons was basically pointing to the slaves. Notice that they also included those who were bound to service. So it included those who were actually indentured servitude, people that were working off their debts so that, and that was a common thing back then. If somebody got into debt, they could submit themselves to indentured servitude to work off their debt so that they could then be free again and be able to, unencumbered, and go about and be a free citizen without having to actually go through bankruptcy or anything else. It was an honorable thing to do. If you acquired too much debt or you did something and caused debt because of, you know, you burned somebody's house down by accident and you were considered at fault or what have you, you could become an indentured servant legally. And so nowadays, that's our paradigm has shifted. We no longer allow indentured servitude. So here's the question. The Constitution allows it. If the Constitution is the supreme law of the land, then why is it that states are creating laws that actually say you can't be an indentured servant? Is it not violating the Constitution? It sure is. You have to amend the Constitution. You have to remove those things so that it does not allow those. It's the same thing with the 14th Amendment, because the very last portion, the three-fifths of all persons would receive, in other words, slaves would receive by three-fifths of each person, they would count for apportionment or representation in the House of Representatives. The actual enumeration shall be made within 3 years after the first meeting of the Congress of the United States and within every subsequent term of 10 years. What they're talking about here is the census. So what they did by forming the United States, the federal government, the first thing they had to do is they had to go out and do a census. So they did a census of 1790. And within 3 years of the forming of this government, because remember, it formed in 1789, they then reapportioned the states by representation and by taxes. And so, in such manner as they shall by law direct. In other words, they're by law, they're going to direct the federal government, or the United States will dictate these census. The number of representatives shall not exceed one representative for every 30,000 people that have been identified above. I'm just going to read this again because this is one that is being violated. Show me where they say, but Congress has the ability to change this number. Show me in the Constitution where Congress has the power and authority to dictate and determine what these representation numbers can be. And I'm going to tell you that they can't, because if it says this, then this is what it is. Anyway, let me go back to the actual enumeration shall be made within 3 years after the first meeting of Congress. In other words, that's when they'll make the changes, because they'll already have the census done. And within every subsequent term of 10 years, they will continue to do these changes to representation in such manner as they shall direct by law. The number of representatives shall not exceed one representative for every 30,000 people, but each state shall have at least one representative, and until such enumeration shall be made, the state of New Hampshire shall be entitled to choose three, Massachusetts eight. So what they're doing is they're laying out, based on the numbers that they knew of, they laid out who got how many representatives in the House of Representatives. And then it changed and it shifted in 1792, I believe, where they actually, by the census, change those numbers, and Virginia grew. And so when vacancies happen in the representatives, so what happens when you call one of your representatives on treason and have them extradited back to the state? What happens? This is what happens. when vacancies happen in the representatives from any state, the executive authority thereof shall issue writs of election to fill such vacancies. Now, he can also, and it goes on, the House of Representatives shall choose their speaker and other officers and shall have the sole power of impeachment. Well, we're talking about impeachment today, aren't we? And as a matter of fact, I actually hope that they just go ahead and go through and try to push the boundaries of impeachment. Because bottom line, it's very, very clear that you can only impeach a person for their tenure in office, not for something that they did, thought of, or what have you. But anyway, when vacancies happen in the representatives from any state, the executive authority thereof shall issue writs of election to fill such vacancies. In other words, there needs to be an election, but it does not say how that election is to be done. So what is happening today, I believe, is that the parties actually come together. Let's say that this person is a representative, and it doesn't even say parties here, does it? But let's just say this person is a Democrat, and that is a Democrat-controlled congressional district. Then the Democrats will pull together, they'll have a caucus or a convention, and they will put together three, and they will elect three people because they have given this up to the party. So, in other words, it's left actually up to the governor, not to the party. But what has happened is when a vacancy occurs, it goes to the party that is filling that seat. Why? Because the party has claimed property rights to that seat because they were the ones that successfully filled that seat. Well, hold it. If we're talking about the party having that level of control, then this goes into the argument of why is it that the party cannot actually kick somebody out of that position if they are violating the party platforms, the party rules, and so forth. But the bottom line is because the Constitution doesn't actually allow the party has wiggled themselves into taking property rights over these seats, because that's what happens. Most of these seats, they'll have these large conventions, and the people of the party actually get to fill in that seat until the next election. So what happens if somebody's charged of treason in December, right after the election period? Well, it's too much of a burden for them to create a special election in another month or two. So what they do is they wait till November and they fill that seat with a temporary person, knowing, and this is why the party did this, knowing that once a person is filling that seat, it's easier to get them reelected than to have to challenge everybody all over again. Moving on, Section 3, this is about the Senate. The Senate of the United States shall be composed of two senators from each state chosen by the state legislature thereof. Now, this was modified by the 17th Amendment for 6 years, and each senator shall have one vote. Immediately after they shall be assembled in Congress for the first election, they shall be divided as equally as may be into three classes. The reason they did this is so that they would have continuity within the Senate. The seats of the Senate, or the seats of the senators of the first class, shall be vacated at the expiration of the second year. Of the second class, the expiration of the fourth year, and the third class, the expiration of the sixth year. So how did they decide who got what class? Because obviously if each state only has two and there's three, they had to decide amongst them who was going to, whether they did at random, I don't know. I never read the history on it. It wasn't that important to me, but I found it interesting how they did this so that there would be some level of continuity to the Senate. Why? Why did they need continuity? I'm here to tell you, because they understood the importance of the role of the Senate, and that is why it was in the scopes of the progressives for a long time in taking that house down, and literally making it a controlled by themselves, by the money brokers, and today the globalists. So with that, we've got a promos or a break coming up. So after these two promos, we'll be right back.
Are you a patriotic proprietor of a business that is looking to get exposure on a fast-growing program? How would you like to get exposure on the only program on the air that provides an actual constitutional solution to all the federal government overreach and encroachments? If you understand the importance of educating the electorate, we would love to work with you in growing your business and revenues while you support the airing of our content on this station. Your support goes to growing the reach of this show and does not pay for elaborate salaries or highfalutin lifestyles. This show is growing fast, and we're also planning on airing the content about Republic Review on a video medium soon. If you'd like to be a part of history and the growth of the most relevant and result-oriented show on the air anywhere in the world, then just email me at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can lock in exceptional pricing and great advertising opportunities. To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process.
Okay, if you want to join in on the dialogue, you need to call 215-TOP-TALK. That's 215-867-8255. And so what we go through now is what happens if a senator is called for treason by the state and they pull him back and creates a vacancy in the Senate. Well, this is how it was in the Constitution. And if vacancies happen by resignation or otherwise during the recess of the legislature of any state, the executive thereof may make temporary appointments until the next meeting of the legislature, which shall then fill such vacancies. Now, that means that this has been modified by the 17th Amendment because the state legislatures no longer appoint. So this goes to the election process in the similar mode as the party system. And so they usually will get these seats filled as fast as possible because they want representation. They don't want to wait with bills being put onto the floor in either of the houses and having to wait. And so this is where the party, I believe, prove me wrong, but in participating in the party, I know that they do this for the state. I've never seen this done and how this is perverted, but I'm telling you that the 12th Amendment, when we get into the 12th Amendment and this whole appointments of by election of senators and so forth, you will notice that there is no mention of a party, a primary, or anything like that, especially with the Electoral College of the president. There's no such thing as a primary in tickets. Each elector is to freely choose who is to be the president and who is a separate. They actually cast two separate votes. We're not bound, and there's nowhere in the Constitution where they are bound to have to vote for a ticket. But we have bought into the fact that the states have surrendered this concept, or actually unconstitutionally surrendered, to the parties in empowering them that level of control. Moving on. No person shall be a senator who shall not have attained to the age of 30 years and been 9 years a citizen of the United States, and who shall not, when elected, be an inhabitant of the state for which he shall be chosen. Now, again, remember, Hillary wasn't a resident of New York until right towards the very end of Bill's terms, and she quickly moved up into, because she wanted to become a senator, because these, what do you want to call them, these carpetbaggers, these manipulators of politics and so forth, she definitely jumped up there so that she would have her finger and work her way into. And you had to know that they knew that after Bush, there would be another opportunity for them to obtain access to more power and to be able to get rich off of it. That had to have been the plan. And that's how they were going to receive their earthly rewards for serving mammon. Anyway, the vice president of the United States shall be president of the Senate, but shall have no vote unless they be equally divided. Now, you know, because there's two from each state, it doesn't matter if odd or even numbers of states, there is always an opportunity that there shall and can be an equal divide or a split, where the vice president would then go in and cast the deciding vote. And that's happened several times. The Senate shall choose their other officers and also a president pro tempore in the absence of the vice president or when he shall exercise the office of the president of the United States. So in other words, when the president, you know, is no longer able to serve, the vice president steps in, then the Senate actually is at risk because they will no longer have a president of the Senate to be able to settle tied votes. The Senate shall have the sole power to try all impeachments. In other words, the House of Representatives will actually do the impeachments, but the Senate has the sole power to try them. In other words, okay, you have the House, because this happened with Clinton. The House of Representatives impeached Clinton. They said, we have crimes. They have basically indicted him of crimes, of high crimes and misdemeanors. And then it goes to the Senate. They have the authority to try them. And if they choose not to, which is what they did with Clinton, which still to me baffles me, there was many things that he should have been tried over and how the House softballed him. And what I mean by this specifically is Clinton was giving away national secrets to China. And if you want to know what those secrets were, then you can go to reclaimingtherepublic.org and look at the Red State Talk Radio at the very bottom. I have a link to the congressional testimony where I think it was Curry and Winterm divulged and pointed out this whole timeline and how Clinton wasn't just giving them away. He was selling them because the Chinese operatives were giving him money. Anyway, the Senate shall have the sole power to try all impeachments. When sitting for that purpose, they shall be on oath or affirmation. When the President of the United States is tried, the Chief Justice shall preside, and no person shall be convicted without the concurrence of two-thirds of the members. In other words, it doesn't matter if it's the president or if it is the clerk of Congress or what have you, whatever the position is, the only way somebody gets fully impeached and kicked out and punished is by a concurrence of two-thirds of the members of the Senate. Judgment in cases of impeachment shall not be extended further than the removal and disqualifications to hold and enjoy any office of honor, trust, or profit under the United States, but the party convicted shall nevertheless be liable and subject to indictment, trial, judgment, and punishment according to the law. In other words, the only thing that happens when somebody gets impeached is they get kicked out and they lose all pay and all of that. That's it. If they're going to be tried and actually breaking rocks into little rocks and so forth, they actually have to go through the legal system to be fully tried. In other words, it's almost like they get tried twice, which sounds like double jeopardy, but it's not. Now, Section 4, the times, places, and manner of holding elections for senators and representatives shall be prescribed in each state by the legislature thereof, but the Congress may at any time by law make or alter such regulations except as to the places of choosing senators. Now, of course, that was a part of the 12th Amendment or 17th Amendment. The Congress shall, or actually, no, that wasn't. That was not modified. The states still have the ability, and the federal government has the place of choosing senator or dictating the time and place of, with regulations. Here's an interesting thing, though. If you understand federal elections, the federal elections are separate from state elections. That's why the Federal Election Committee, or I think it's commission, they're the ones that actually have the oversight in ensuring that federal elections are being managed. And this is where Trump needs to ensure that the integrity of the election system by the time he goes into the 2020 election is cleaned up to where they are no longer allowing voter fraud and election fraud. This really needs to be cleaned up because it is one of our number one problems with our process and our government today. The Congress shall assemble at least once in every year, and such meetings shall be on the first Monday in December. Okay, so that was modified by the 10th Amendment, unless they shall by law appoint a different day, which they do all the time. Each house shall be the judge of the elections, returns, and qualifications of its own members, and a majority of each shall and a majority of each shall constitute a quorum to do business, but a smaller number may adjourn from day to day and may be authorized to compel the attendance of absent members in such manner and under such penalties as each house may provide. Now, so if, in other words, they can actually allow somebody to skip and, you know, based on the quorum and based on the census of voting, they will allow people to go off and do things that aren't doing necessarily their sessions and business. And this has happened with, I believe, Representative Jackson and others, where they've been out doing things and not in attendance of the session. And it actually says right here that they shall be under penalty as each house may provide. Each house may determine the rules of its proceedings, punish its members for disorderly behavior, and, with the concurrence of two-thirds, expel a member. Now, this was changed and modified, actually, but it doesn't mention in John Rowland's, in this version of the Constitution, which is highlighted by which of the violations, this was actually amended by Section 3 of the 14th Amendment. And so when we get through the amendments, we'll talk about this, but that is where the states have the heavy stick. Well, we will get back into this tomorrow. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless. Reclaiming the Republic is more than an educational radio show. My intent is to also work with you and local leadership to promote matters of the Constitution and self-governance. This way we can all promote constitutional awareness within our communities and with our elected officials and public leaders. If you love liberty and sovereignty and recognize the federal tyranny that is threatening our lives, then we are asking for your help. And here are a few ways you can help. Spread the word about this radio show, Reclaiming the Republic. It is the only radio show in the world asserting a constitutional solution to federal overreach. Download and share our podcast and content. Read, like, follow, and share our Mobiusstrip Press and Reclaiming the Republic pages on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at Mobiusstrip News. Get
informed about local groups in the area and get involved. Most importantly, become a constitutional warrior with your local leaders and demand that they begin applying constitutional tests to what they are doing and who they are supporting. Thank you.